Welcome to Footnotes. This is a new type of podcast where we're going to the places of composers, areas that have inspired them. I'm Richard Dove, and joining me on this journey is Stuart Milson, who is the Quarterly Review's classical music reviewer. Stuart, good morning.
Good morning, Richard.
So tell us, where are we now?
Well, Richard, we are at Ainsford or Ainsford Station, depending on how you say it. It's one of those scones or scones things, but we're at Ainsford Station in North Kent, and we're almost at the head of the Darrant Valley, a beautiful pastoral valley that extends from Farningham down to Otford, so it's about 5 miles. And this beautiful expanse of North Kent English countryside might have fallen under the bulldozers and tarmac machines of the builders of the M25, but it didn't, and it's an intact piece of countryside. And it is here in 1925 that the composer Peter Warlock came to live with his friend E.J. Moran, a fellow composer. And I thought it would be interesting to start at the station, because Peter Warlock was very fond of late nights in London, and he would come back from town, the train would come in, and he'd arrange, in the days when there were station masters, for the station master to wake him up in the carriage so that he'd get out and walk back.
I've just noticed that it says, just below tickets, it says station master. There's a sign still there.
Well, that's one relic of the past. It's survived like the Shoreham Valley has.
Yes.
But Warlock was somebody who was a true escapist. His interests were always outside of the present. He was interested in Elizabethan music, for example. He was also a friend of D.H. Lawrence. And he and Lawrence conceived of a sort of colony of people who were apart from the mainstream. And that really wasn't achieved with Lawrence, but he tried to achieve it here in Ainsford with the cottage which he set up with E.J. Moran.
It's a sort of bohemian colony. Is it a precursor to what he wanted with Lawrence? That he said it would be orgiastic, but in a country setting.
Well, they said that the kitchen on Sunday at Warlock's cottage was swimming in beer, so you can probably guess what it was like here. It was quite dissolute, and Moran himself was known as Jolly Jack. But the point is that in the Shoreham Valley there is a sort of a ghost of English mysticism in the form of Samuel Palmer, the painter who lived at Shoreham. He and his followers used to dress up in medieval costume and reenact the rituals of the past, and they wanted to live as medieval people. And to some extent, Warlock, with his interest in Tudor and Elizabethan music and the music of the past, he was a 1920s equivalent, almost, of Samuel Palmer the painter. So there's an interesting echo there.
Yes, well, why don't we walk into the village then and find this place of ill repute?
Let's do it. Let's follow the trail.
Well, we've walked down from the station, Stuart, and we saw the railway inn, a plaque and a house. So they had a watering hole when Peter got off the train,
yes,
or was woken up and got off the train and stumbled down the high street into Ainsford, and we're outside the house. And there's a lovely plaque here put up by the Dartford Rural District Arts Council. In 1969, Peter Warlock and E.J. Moran, composers, lived here, 1925 to 1928. And there's a pub over the road, which we know they were frequenters of.
It would be a life support system.
Life support system. What did he compose when he was here? Do we know that?
Well, it was a profitable time for the composer. And the most famous of his pieces is the suite called Capriole. It's a suite of ancient dances which Warlock arranged from a 16th century manuscript. And it's called Capriole Suite because it's all about how a lawyer called Capriole was taught how to dance. So the period certainly here would have attracted many other composers and people from the arts who would congregate in the cottage and in the village. And much of Warlock's music was inspired by music out of his time. It was all music of the distant past. But we've been talking about Peter Warlock.
That's not his name,
no,
is
it's
it?
Not. No, it's not. No. Peter Warlock is a pseudonym. It's an assumed name. The point of calling himself Peter Warlock was to escape the conventional persona of Philip Heseltine, which was his true name.
That's not nothing to do with the Inland Revenue or anything like that.
No, I don't think so. He wanted to escape from a conventional mode of living and identity, and assuming the name Warlock would accentuate that slightly sinister side of his character, because he was very interested in the occult. He was very drawn towards Celtic mythology and the marginalia of culture. So Warlock became an almost sinister figure. But that wasn't the only name that he used. He actually wrote under the name of Rab Nulas, which is saloon bar backwards.
So it could have been over in the Castle Hotel or the Five Bells.
They might have known him as Rab Nulas.
Rab Nulas, yes. Oh, you'll be wanting that Philip Heseltine. No, he's not been in here, love.
No, but there was another person who lived here who was called Hal Collins. He was actually part Maori, would you believe?
Right.
Who had an ancestor who was a cannibal. And Hal Collins was an interesting figure. He had some musical ideas of his own. And in Michael Trenn's definitive book from the mid-80s called The Music Makers, all about the English musical renaissance, he mentions Hal Collins, who boasted a cannibal grandmother, who was an interesting man in his own right, an effective artist, as his woodcuts show, and he was a self-taught musician who was interested in setting parts of Tristram Shandy. The possibilities at this cottage, the cultural horizons, were actually very wide.
This is a creative hub. It's a modern media centre, isn't it?
It is.
In the three back bedrooms, there are three composers active.
It's an interesting little place. There's a rickety window at the front. It's a very traditional sort of North Kent brick cottage. It looks as though the original windows are there. Really, one can imagine Warlock and Moran stumbling across the road to the various hostelries, setting out on one of their walks through the village on a spring day.
Now, the village still has a
ford.
Yes.
The
River Darenth goes through it.
Yes.
Let's go over there and admire the view and imagine it from the point of view of the composers.
Let's do that.
We've walked round, we're at the back of the cottage, very nice garden, there's a gate through, and then amazingly you just walk towards this south here, and you've got Ainsford Castle.
Yes,
a Norman castle, which must have been stared at by Warlock, stroke Heseltine, stroke the other name that he used,
yes.
Saloon Bar, and you must have looked at these walls for maybe for inspiration.
Yes.
Or despair in his case.
Possibly. As we've said, the spirit of the past, of antiquity, hangs over Warlock's music. Obviously, the Suite Capriole is the most famous of his works, and that does evoke the music of another age. But there are many other nursery songs that he wrote that have a sense of English mysticism, of mists rising above the water here on the River Darenth.
Because we're now within the ruins of the castle.
Yes.
So a foggy morning or night could have been inspirational, couldn't it?
Yes, and when at the opening of the nursery rhymes that he composed, the atmosphere of How Many Miles to Babylon. One is almost half in the English countryside and half in the Holy Land. There's a wonderful atmosphere of otherworldliness in the music.
We haven't mentioned much about E.J. Moran, who was an equally distinguished composer.
Oh, he was, yes.
And did his work, was it reflected in the landscape? Do you think he was inspired by this Kentish landscape, as Warlock was, or not?
I think he probably was inspired by all English and indeed Irish settings, because he ended his days in Ireland. He was very influenced, Moran, by the North Norfolk landscape and coastal landscape. Throughout his music, especially in the violin concerto, which was performed a few years ago at the English Music Festival, the soloist in that performance was Rupert Marshall Luck, who's a great advocate of Moran's music. That piece has a definite and authentic Britishness, if not Englishness, in its identity.
Yes.
It's very much music that you would associate with pastoral Britain.
And here we look on pastoral Britain.
We do indeed.
With a Norman castle.
On Saxon foundations.
Yes, yes.
And there's still quite a lot of the castle left. And the valley itself, had it been lost to the motorway builders, it would have been an environmental tragedy and disaster. Thank goodness. One can hear...
Yes.
In the distance,
you can hear
the motorway,
yeah.
The rerouted motorway,
yes, yes.
That this is an oasis and a place that was rescued and reclaimed. And there's a heron flying over the trees there. It's a beautiful, clear river. And at Shoreham, we're in fact Warlock associated with the Shoreham Dramatic Society, and there's a very good photograph that exists of the Shoreham Dramatic Society, all dressed as characters from Robin Hood, or so it looks, and Warlock is on one side with a tankard and Moron is on the other side with a tankard. So I think that the whole atmosphere here of a world apart and a world in the past greatly attracted the two composers.
Let's go down to the centre of the village. After the two pubs, there's another one, I think, that they could call in on, wouldn't they, at some point?
It's not open at the moment, though, which is a great disadvantage.
We've walked down now, Stuart, through the village, down to the ford. It's so pleasant to have a village that still has a ford. And the old bridge is here that goes across to... That must be another pub over there,
yes.
I imagine, wouldn't it?
And it's lovely to see the depth measured out on the foot of the bridge in feet, not
yes.
metres.
Yes.
So it's a very
yes.
traditional place. Yeah.
Talk to me a little more about some of Warlock's works, then. We've mentioned the Capriole.
Yeah.
And perhaps it might be useful to have a little listen to that
yes.
now. Despite the despair, there's one piece of music that you want to talk about that really does underline the melancholia
yes.
of Warlock.
The interesting thing about Warlock is that there were no symphonies, no operas, nothing grand, anything like that. It was all miniaturist. It was all quite small scale. The longest work that he wrote was The Curlew, which was a setting of W.B. Yeats. And it's been referred to as the most melancholy piece of English music ever written.
That'll cheer us up in these times.
Or maybe we shouldn't play it. But there's a very striking, astringent quality to the music. It's winter sunlight coming through the reeds and water vegetation here almost. You can imagine a winter's day here in Ainsford with the curlew work just sort of echoing across the water meadows here.
Yes.
Rather a lovely setting. But the English melancholia, which we often remark about, it was very much a feature of this work. I think it lasts probably about 20-25 minutes. It's very well worth hearing. it's an impressionist song cycle almost. I wonder if anybody ever tried to expand the work or orchestrate it to make it larger. It just wouldn't work. It's piercing and it's strong and potent for being so small scale. Just a whisper of sound almost in some of it.
You talk of small scale. He wrote nursery songs. Or
yes.
Is that what they're called, nursery
yes,
songs? But they are vignettes, aren't they?
They are.
28 seconds, 40 seconds.
They are.
So they're quite a different approach.
Yes, these nursery songs are just little droplets and vignettes, as you say, just little pastel shaded impressions and written in a beautiful sentimental style. And none more so than the song about the kitten. It's a poignant piece from the point of view that when Warlock met his end, which was in London in 1930, he was 36 years old and they found his body in his flat and he'd put the gas on at his cooker, but he'd made sure that he'd put his cat out. I don't know whether the cat was a kitten, but
right.
I always think of the cat and I always think of the kitten in the nursery song.
So to remind us of Peter Warlock and his works, perhaps it's very appropriate that we close with that piece, a very short piece. Oh,
and it's from
the
nursery songs, which are all delightful and very sentimental.
Oh, my kitten, my kitten, and oh, my kitten, my dear, it's such a sweet path as this, there is not far nor near. Here we go up, up, up. Here we go down, down, down. Here we go backwards and forwards, and here we go round, round, round. Oh, my kitten, a kitten, and oh, my kitten, my dearie, such a sweet pap as this, there is not far nor near. Here we go up, up, up. Here we go down, down, down. Here we go backwards and forwards, and here we go round.
Join Stuart Milson and I on another journey. We may be in Essex next time, looking at Holst. But for now, thank you for listening.
Thank you.